Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast thing that we do that is for people who play with needles and people who love to play with needles, who love those people.
Yes, you finally got it.
Yeah, I worked on that. Pretty cool,
although
huh?
That started to sound like the Chili Hollow introduction, though. So
I know.
we differentiate between the two.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought, it brings it full circle, see?
It does.
Yeah. But, yeah, I might have done better if I'd asked Jane to come up with it.
Perhaps. Yeah. We should challenge her, actually, to do that.
Yeah, well, the trouble with her, though, is we'd be 30 seconds into the show before we actually had it said. So, yeah.
Because we're not now.
Oh, oops. Never mind. So, okay, let's see. What do we got going here? If you missed Debbie Woodward last Sunday, you got to go back and hear it. What a tremendous, tremendous show with Debbie Woodward, Paint a Pony Designs, and Destination Dallas, and how she built her business, how it got started, which was a fluke kind of thing. Really a great story. So if you missed last Sunday, go back and listen to that. It's really good.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And I'm looking forward to actually, you know, hoping to go to the show next year just to be able to walk around and see all the different stores. You know, my search for stores is never ending here. And it just seems like there aren't very many around. So to be able to have all of them in one place so I can say, where are you? Because I'm finding just to get supplies and things, I'm still resorting to online things. So if I was doing painted canvases, it would be easy. But doing the kind of work that I'm finding myself drawn to, it's been a little bit more difficult. So, so to be able to talk to those people and see them would be pretty cool.
Yep. And speaking of your work, how many pieces you got going now? You're out of control.
Yeah. Right. So when we started the podcast, I had none and I was knitting. And then I started the Debbie Rowley piece. And then, so what's happened is, okay, so I guess this is all about who I am. I am a little fidgety. I don't like not knowing things. Like once I have a subject matter that I'm curious about, I can't not know it. So I have to delve into it 150%. And so for this, because it's a practical art, right? It would be like cooking. If I decided I was into bread making, I would be making loaves and loaves of bread, which fortunately I'm not, because I would probably be 700 pounds. So this is the non-700 pound version of that.
Good move.
So what happens is we talk to people and each person is, you know, has a little different thing to contribute. And, you know, so Debbie had the counted needlepoint with all these new stitches. So I had to try that. So I started with that. And then as we're talking to different people, it's cross stitch and, you know, not samplers. I don't have a sampler going yet, but counted cross stitch. And then I started looking into the stump work, which led me to historical needlework in England, which then opens up to Jacobean crewel work. So, it's kind of a lot of things that I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. I want to try a little bit of that. So what has ended up happening is I've started, and I'm working on each of these things. It's not like I'm, you know, I started and I put it aside and I'm not coming back to it. I've got a whole bunch of different things going and I pick up different ones depending on generally where I am and the mood I'm in. So my counted needlepoint, charted needlepoint right now is that's done. And I have another Debbie canvas, but I haven't started it yet. So that's out of the way. I have two cross stitch pieces going right now. One is, a tiny piece that's a little clockwork bird that I got as a kit, from Nordic Needlepoint. And that one is a challenge only because it's charted in color and the canvas size is so tiny that it's impossible to work without magnification and light. So there's that. Then I have a very, very easy, it's probably on 14-point Aida cloth, other cross-stitch piece that I found this week was really good for being in a car for a long period of time, even a bumpy car, because it's hard to miss in 14
There you go.
and you don't really need, like I could not do any like freehand needle embroidery because that you really need precision, right? So this, you know, you're basically stabbing and you just stab until you get the needle. So even if you're on a bumpy road, it's not terrible. So that's my, I can do it anywhere. And it's the piece itself, I look at it and it's very sort of, it looks almost pixelated to me, and it's almost comical how basic it is now, because not that, what I mean by that is this. It's, so compared to something like a surface embroidery where you have these beautiful smooth curves and even a counted needlepoint, you can get these really nice curves because you're working on a smaller gauge canvas. Because this is so big, it ends up looking a little bit like, you know, 1980s Mario Kart. You know, little squares, right? But it's charming because of that, right? So, and it's a reasonably sized piece, and it's just all figures on a background. So that's one, and that's my I can take it anywhere, do anything, don't have to put too much effort into it kind of thing. Then I have, I think this is the last one. Yeah, I have two things going. I have a crewel work piece, which is also a kit, and it's a printed cloth, and it involves, well, I don't know, probably 30 different crewel work stitches. So again, this is a really nice one for learning. So it's done bullion knots and French knots and woven bits and, you know, chain stitches and stem stitch and straight stitch and a little bit of long and short stitch. So this is another one where I'm learning a lot, but it's kind of big and it, like nothing is minuscule and I'm struggling to see it. So it's an enjoyable, relaxing piece because, I can learn something and I'm not struggling to do it technically.
Yes.
And then on the other, my last thing to do when I'm, you know, when I need something to really focus on that's going to be really, really challenging, is I've started picking up a little bit of stump work, and I haven't gotten to the point of the raised bits, but that to me is, it's just so different because it's embroidery, first of all. So it's a little bit different skill set. Instead of counting, you're working along lines, and again, it's because it's freehand. There's a lot more judgment involved, I think. Because you're putting a needle where you want to, sort of, instead of, you know, in a counted place.
Right.
So it's a little bit more technique in the art sense to me, and a little bit less in the how flat can I get my thread sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I like working in things that are, I guess, calculated, right? So I'm a scientist. So doing counted cross stitch, counted needlepoint work, you know what to do. It's just a matter of, you know, how well can you do it? Is, you know, how good is your technique? And then surface embroidery, to me, is a little bit more artful, especially when you start getting into blending colors and silk shading and things like that. For me, that's a big challenge because I'm not an artist by any stretch. So I don't feel like I have a natural eye for this is where, you know, a flower petal should start changing color into, you know, the edge of the petal versus the inside. So
right.
That I feel like I really have to pay attention and really concentrate on. So, and that I have no piece that I'm working on. I'm really just dabbling. I have silk and muslin in an embroidery hoop. I've traced a couple of designs out of a Jane Nicholas book onto the cloth. And literally it's just, you know, learning how to put needle to thread. That's, or needle and thread to silk. That's pretty much it. It's, because it's going to take a ton of practice to get get good at it. Right.
Right. Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the part with, you know, Mary Corbett, just because she's the most visible and is really stinking good. But, when you look at her work, and you go, wow, it's absolutely perfect, and everything's this, you know, each stitch is the same size and same width, and mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, everything is just so, and you think, wow, that's really good. But then when you add that extra dimension of she is not going in three holes up and two holes over,
No, not at all.
And to me, that's that next level. And to look at her work, and there are others. You know, there's a million
there's
embroiderers.
Lots. Yeah.
Million, mm-hmm. And they're all, you know, so many of them are just brilliant. But that's what I just sit there and just stare at it because, like you, I'm not an artist. And to be able to sit there and sense that the color needs to start changing here, and mm-hmm. a chain stitch is really what I need to make this edge work. And,
right.
you know, this is a satin stitch and I need to pad it because that will add the extra mm-hmm. dimension. And then to do it with absolute precision on a blank canvas, literally a blank canvas.
Yeah.
It's just mind blowing to me. And yes, practice. Yeah. And that's, I have some cloth too, and I'm about to start dabbling with some of Mary's, her monograms.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Just some cheap cloth. And just some DMC thread, and I'm just going to mm-hmm. see how it goes, knowing that I'm just going to trash it when it's done because it'll be
right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I think that's where the years of experience come, because something that's going to be, again, a struggle for me. You know, I'm struggling. Okay, how nice can I get the satin stitch? And I even posted on our Facebook where I had some confusion about instructions because one reference book had me stitching an outline and then doing the satin stitch within the outline, right? So putting my needle inside. So if I'm stitching a circle, to do the satin stitch, putting it inside the outline. And then another reference had me stitching it the outside, which made more sense to me because I was having a hard time making it neat the other way. So one of the great things about our Facebook page is I can post my troubles there and say, okay, because I know somebody knows way more than I do. And say, hey, you know, I don't understand what's going on here and this doesn't feel right. What am I supposed to do? And the answer came very easy. And it was, you know, quite a few people popped in and said, no, you're using the outline to stitch over to give it that. And then your satin stitch becomes so much more crisp on the outside. And then if you need to outline it again, you do it over that.
Right.
If the outline itself has some purpose. So, yeah, that was tremendously helpful. And you can tell, you know, from one flower to the next on the cloth, you know, oh, here's one and here's the other one where I did it the way I'm supposed to do it. And wow, that was a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. It's that kind of stuff. Just cloth and thread and have at it and see what happens. And then, okay, that didn't work so well. Let me try this, mm-hmm. get some advice. Oh yeah, that cleaned up really nice. Okay, now I have that little bit. I can build on that.
And I guess that was the whole point of samplers to begin with, was figure stuff out, right? So I'm just the same thing that everybody else did to learn, just not in the same style.
Right.
So yeah, it's like a doodle pad of needlework, I guess. Just trying different things and seeing which ones are nice and just picking, you know, I'm picking pictures. I went right back to the way I started needlework, which was when I was tiny, my grandmother tracing, pictures out of coloring books onto muslin and then having me just backstitch across, you know, along the outlines.
Yeah.
It's really no different than that. It's just here, stitch this thing. And see how you get it, you know, and then, you know, it was, okay, well, that's nice, but your curves aren't very good. So why don't you try shortening your stitches so that you can make it the curves a real curve instead of, you know, very angular. And you don't know that until you do it and you look at it and say, wow, that doesn't look like I wanted to. So,
right.
It's kind of fun, but that's the piece that I need to, all right, I need to concentrate. I need to really put my effort into. That's not one where I have TV on in the background. That's something where I'm listening to a podcast or music or nothing, because I really need to pay attention and I need really good light and I need to not be in a car that's bouncing. And it depends also, and we've talked about this before and I know a lot of people will identify this. It depends on the mood I'm in. You know, if I'm in a mood where I feel like learning something, then I'll pick that up. If I'm in a mood where I'm stressed out about something or worried or kind of have to work something through in my head, I'll pick up, you know, the bigger cross stitch or even the crewel work, because I can stitch that without looking at a guide and thinking about it. And I can just, it's just needle going through fabric, and you'd be surprised how at the end of an hour or so, sometimes things get resolved, you know? So.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, you occupy that part of your mind that needs to do something like that, and then the other side relaxes, and then solutions come. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, the Buddhists call it the monkey mind. So you're giving your monkey something to do. The monkey is the part that's, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do for tomorrow, and I don't know how work is going to be, and this weekend I have to go somewhere, and all right, monkey, here's something to do, and then you can figure out all your other stuff. Right. So.
No, I do that. I do that a lot with my bike riding. I don't do it so much with my stitching, but you know, I'll have a problem. I need a solution. Okay, I need a bike ride. I need I need 2 hours of sweating and sore legs because it's the same thing. And then my mind relaxes and we start to figure things out. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. That's how it goes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, so, Mark has commented more than once, you need a bike ride for this one, don't you? Yep, I do. I do. I'll see you later.
Yeah. For me, that's either the gym or the motorcycle. Because the motorcycle, you know, like a bike, you know, driving in a car, you just drive in a car. You're not really paying much attention a lot of times. On a motorcycle, you pretty much have to concentrate a bit because, you know, people are trying to kill you. So. You do have to pay attention, and your mind, your head's on a swivel and all those things. And it takes up just enough of your brain so that you can really focus on the other thing. So, all of those things.
Isn't that the truth though? Yeah. Same thing with a road bike. Yep. You gotta pay attention because people are trying to kill you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what they taught us. So ride like you're invisible and ride like people are trying to kill you. Yep. And once you really embody that, you're a much safer rider.
Yep. So true. Yep. Yeah. And see, for those things, I have to do that on my road bike because I can't go on my mountain bike on single track trails because there you have to pay attention or you end up in a tree. So,
yeah.
You know, so it doesn't work because I've tried it. Okay. I'm going to go on my mountain bike to solve this problem. And then you can't because one misstep and you're down on some rocks or something. So yeah, it has to be the road bike. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we all find our solutions, don't we?
We do. Yeah. We do. And I'm just so glad to have this as a means of just blowing off some steam or, you know, doing anything. And it's funny because my son walked in yesterday and I had the Cruel Work piece and he hadn't seen it in a while. And it's got flowers in it. It's a little bit splashy because it's got so much color and things going on. He was like, wow, that actually looks like, you know, stuff. Which from a 14-year-old is like the best compliment ever, right?
Yeah, there you have it, yeah.
But he was looking at it, he's like, wow, you know, that stitch in particular, those flowers, that's really cool the way that happened. It's with a little variegated thread and stuff. So, from a 14-year-old, that's a pretty high compliment.
Yep. Yeah, see, it's interesting that you find stress relief stitching. Now, see, stitching relaxes me, but... what it does for me, because I invariably watch TV, mainly sports, while I'm stitching. And what it does for me is it does not allow me to think about anything else. So I'll be paying attention to TV and my stitching. And so I can't think about anything else because I'm occupying, everything I want to put into it with that. So then when I get done, it's like I've had this escape. So I don't solve any problems, but I've just had this complete release escape. The body relaxes and we just stitch and watch mindless TV or sports. And it works a different function for me. Yeah.
I think sometimes it does that for me too. And as a mom, as a single mom and as a working single mom, taking that time to stitch, that's really your own time.
Yes.
There's a lot of guilt associated with that because, you know, I should be cleaning the house. I should be doing something else. There's, you know, a million other things I should, in quotes, be doing. But the truth of it is, if I don't do something to just relax and chill out, I'm not a very good parent and I'm not a very good worker because I'm not taking care of my own, you know, need to just calm down a little bit. So It's a health thing too. It's
it is. It is. And you know, we've talked about this on, not necessarily on the show, but other times. And it always reminds me when Marga's mother, it was one of those long drawn out declines to death. Mm-hmm. And, when we were down toward the end and hospice care was involved, I'll never forget the hospice person came to Marga and said, "How are you?" And it, you know, it several years of just, you know, this long decline, you know, and yes. I would never wish that on anyone. And just draining for Marga and stress and all those things. And the hospice, you know, "How are you?" And of course, Marga assumes, you know, "How are you doing in terms of dealing with your mother and the fact that she's going to die?" And Marga started an answer, and the hospice worker stopped her and said, "No, I don't, no, not that. How are you doing?
You know,
how it's that very same thing. You're not a good parent. You're not a good worker unless you have something like that that allows you to escape." And it was for Marga. She still tells that story, and she took that to heart, and it really helped her in terms of, how are you doing? What are you doing for you? What are you doing for your sanity? For your, you know, and and it came from that hospice worker at a time that was very stressful and very sad and just, you know, depressing and demoralizing. And it was that one bright spot. "No, I don't care about that. How are you doing?" And, saying, yeah, that's, I learned so much from hospice workers. What amazing group of people.
I think it's a parent thing. You know, maybe that's what I've learned from being a parent.
Yeah.
So the analogy that's been given to me is it's like the instructions they give you on an airplane. You know, put on your own oxygen mask before you take care of those around you.
Yes.
And it's simply because if you don't, then if you pass out while you're trying to put the mask on somebody else, then that's two people that aren't helped. But if you take care of yourself first, then you will be able to help everybody else around you because you will be fine.
Right.
And, you know, throughout my time as a parent, I've noticed that dramatically. Once I learned that lesson and when I actually listened to that lesson, because of course you don't always do it perfectly, it's remarkable how much happier everyone else around me is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still hard because you feel like as a parent, you're supposed to, there's a lot of supposed to's.
Well, but yeah, there's supposed to's, but it's also that instinct, especially as a mother, you know, protect the kid, take care of the kid. If he's okay, I can relax.
And, right. If he's okay, I'm okay. And that's not the case.
No. Right. Yeah.
It sometimes it's quite the opposite.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
needlework has been tremendous for me, and it's fun. So I have four pieces going. And each one is doing a little different thing for me. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and I'm trying to figure out how I can normalize this at work so that I can bring a piece to work so that when things start getting nutty there, I can just take out a piece of needlework. And because that's, I mean, it would be great. It would be such a great stress relief to be able to just do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nicole Neville posted, I think it was this morning, I think it was on Instagram, that she posted a picture of this, whatever she's stitching. She was doing it in her car before work, and she decided she needed more light. And I thought, yeah, now there's, you know, before you go in for the work of the day, just a little relax moment. And
yeah. I don't generally take lunch breaks, but now I kind of have a motivation to do so.
Right.
Which is half self-preservation and half, okay, well, now I have something to do. So if I could just find a quiet place, I can just go and stitch for a while, and you know, my afternoon will be that much nicer.
Yep. Well, there we have it. Now, my stitching, I have done the thing that I said I would never do again, and that's put myself on deadlines with stitching. I finished the Cooper stocking, and that's off to Vonna Pfeiffer for Twisted Stitcher treatment. I'm hoping by Christmas, but I know she is very, very busy, so we'll see. And then, but then I have the Connor stocking, Shepherd's Bush stocking, that I started, and I'm on a mission to get that done quickly because our son Kevin's stocking, that was a 28 year procrastination effort. So I'm determined now that I have one done for one grandson. I'm going to get the other one done. So everything sits aside until that's done. And fortunately, it's going rather quickly. But you make me jealous because I really, really, I have a Hands Across the Sea sampler that I would love to start. And I have at least three needlepoint things that are either in progress or I would love to start. But I, you know, I'm disciplining myself this one time, and I'm saying you're going to finish this stocking because we're not having it hang over our heads into next year and then pressure to get it done for next Christmas. I'm getting it done. It's going to Vanna. And whenever it's finished, it's finished. I don't care if it's January or February. I don't care. I just know in my mind it's not hanging over my head. So.
Right. And if it's not hanging up, you can take a picture of it and hang the picture on your mantle.
Right. So, So I'm hanging in there with that. But, oh, man, I got other stuff I'd really like to stitch.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes because you see something that is, you know, really beautiful or looks like, I'd like to try that. And then you want to try it. And I'm so, you know, I kind of am at a point where I want to try everything, you know.
That's
I haven't
the danger.
Found it is. It is. And I'm starting to find like, oh, okay, I enjoy this or I don't enjoy that. You know, certain things I don't enjoy particularly as much as other things. But it's just so, there's so many things that I want to do. So.
Yep. No, and one of the things that's in my head is I bought that Yvette Stanton book on heart, old world. It's laying there on my table, and I just want to go get a piece of linen and some white thread. I want to try that stuff, but you talk about stuff that you got to pay attention, and so it's on the horizon.
Yep, that's the Jane Nicholas books for me is the stump work. So you know we'll both be doing new things I think soon, not the same new things, and that doesn't surprise me at all because. You know, we are different in our approaches to things. So,
But stump work, I'm not setting stump work aside. I got to give that a try because I saw a dragonfly. I want to say it was an Inspirations newsletter today or something. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I want to do that. Yeah.
So Jane has a whole book of dragonflies and it is stunning. And so that's the other thing with stump work is, depending on what you're doing, there's a lot of additional materials that she and other people that are very good at it use. So it's not just the threads, you're using bits of leather and beads and all sorts of things. So I was in a fabric store the other day looking for supplies for something and I came across, I was actually buying fabric for bees wings. So it was just a very light, like an organza. So almost a transparent type thing. And I found one that was iridescent. So for any other thing, it would be the cheesiest, like kind of like, why would you ever use this fabric in any kind of gown or anything, you know, as far as a costume, well, maybe for a costume, but like for attire, I would never use it.
Right.
But man, is it perfect for dragonfly wings and not other insect wings because other insects don't have that iridescence to them. Not like this does, but it is absolutely perfect. So when you are ready, let me know and I will send you a piece because, you know, you buy a quarter of a yard and you have enough for 73,000 dragonflies.
Yeah. Enough for long after you're sick of making them. Yes.
Yeah, but then I still need like the, you know, the some of the bodies that she does with like leather and other padded stitches, but you know, other materials. So now I've kind of got my eye out for old fabrics, weird fabrics, you know, little bits and bobs of things around that would make for good stump work things. Yeah. So,
well, that was, you know, that stump work reminds me, in a way, a long time ago. I was curious about fly fishing, but not the actual fishing because I find fishing incredibly boring, but fly tying and how the different flies, the wet flies and the dry flies. And in reading on that, those guys that do that as a hobby, same kind of thing. They're always looking for bits and pieces of things, lace and all kinds of things that imitate nature, and collecting those pieces, and then little drawers of oh, I got a little of this here and a little of that there, and any old clothes, they don't get thrown away. They get cut up into little pieces and completely different world, but the same kind of thing, the same concept. Yeah.
Yeah. I was at an antique, not a store, but like a flea markety kind of thing in Pennsylvania over the summer. And they had a lot of like old stitched pieces or, like old tablecloths and things like that. And it was funny because I didn't look at them the same way, because normally I'd look at them as, wow, okay, that's an old tablecloth that somebody stitched on or, you know, whatever. But now it's, what can I make out of that?
Yeah.
You know, is that something that I could rescue the fabric and maybe cut off the stitching and then stitch it again? Because, you know, these are old pieces of cloth and they don't behave the same way as new, mm-hmm. right? So there is some benefit, I think, then to using aged things as well.
Well, yeah, they have a character to them. And then, you know, look at how many people will dye linen with coffee or tea or mm-hmm. whatever to give it an old look. And so, yeah, if you can rescue a piece of fabric that actually is old, has an old look to it, yeah, why not?
You know what? You know what stains silk really well?
What's that?
Red wine.
Yeah. And how would you know this?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Just a guess.
Scientific experiment, huh?
Yeah. So right. So this was one of my pieces that I was, you know, my noodling pieces that I was working on. And this is one of those happy accidents because I did exactly that. I spilled, you know, red wine because my area is not really conducive and I was reaching around three things to get to something and spilled it on there. And at first I was like, oh, well, you know, that's terrible, but it's not a piece. It's just a scrapbook. You know, it's basically scrap paper. But then I looked at it again and I said, you know, if I dyed the whole fabric that exact way, it's a beautiful color.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, in the future, I may do exactly that because it didn't stain perfectly. There was a little bit of gradation to it, which mm-hmm. would be different than buying just colored silk to work on. So I was like, wow, that was a happy accident that happened. So I would definitely look to do that in the future, because a lot of the work you see is on, you know, ivory or white fabric, but to do it on something like that, that's a pretty other color would be kind of nice.
Yeah. There you go. Science at work right there. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So got to talk about, you know, every now and then I'll trip over a project that someone's doing that just makes me stop. And one on my Feedly newsfeed thing, one of the blogs that I follow is Jan Fitzpatrick's. I knew I'd mess it up. Jan Fitzpatrick's Thread Medley. And it's threadmedley.wordpress.com. And I don't know. I just ran across her blog and I just put it on the list, you know, and I just follow her and I have for quite some time now. She started this painted canvas ASOW tall ship. And it's a Russian tall ship, with a sky, kind of a cloudy sky. And she started stitching it. And I've been following this thing since she first posted about it. And it's one of those, it's not just some cheesy, sailboat picture. I mean, it's not cutesy
or anything like that.
No, not at all. It's a full blown with all the rigging defined, the masts, the whole bit, the cross pieces, whatever those are, crow's nests, all of those things all defined. And she's stitching it and she's stitching all the rigging. And as you watched it, you go, wow, that's really neat the way she's stitching the rigging. And then you look and you realize there's sky behind that. She needs to get something mm-hmm. realistic behind all of that, the masts and the cross pieces and all the rigging that looks like sky. And so my question was, all right, I'm going to be curious how she did that. And then she explains and she shows how she pulled it off. And it's just an amazing project to watch unfold with and she's just doing – The sky treatment is very, very nice, and she's being effective behind the masts and the rigging. And the way she's doing rigging And she explains how she goes about that and basket weaving the masks. And it's one of those that, to me, is just a standout, impressive piece to watch unfold.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not the typical painted canvas, just going to basket weave the whole thing to fill in the blanks at all. This is a perfect example of going beyond the art itself, you know. And she talks in earlier pieces or earlier blog posts about that, about the painting that it was derived from. And so I'm sure she's using that as inspiration. But it almost bridges the gap between a painted canvas and like a needlepoint piece, because there's all these specialty stitches that she's using to get the effects that she needs to show the rigging and the sails and how the fabric is different from the sky and wood, you know, because the ship itself is so many different materials.
Right.
So to use all those different means of stitching, aside from just the color, to define that and to create that texture, it's masterfully done.
Yeah. And she's absolutely bringing this to life. I did get kind of a chuckle though. Her post from just, like it was September 16, but I just saw it here just the other day. I had not been keeping up quite like I should, but where she talked about she had finished a portion and she was going to be able to scroll the canvas down to get to more of the ship. And she thought she was down to the main ship itself. And as she scrolled down, she realized she'd only done the top half of the mast.
Yeah.
And there was more rigging. And I kind of emotionally went through that excitement about scrolling, because you know when you have scrolled stuff and you work on it for a long time, you kind of forget where you're at on the overall canvas, and so it's kind of an exciting little mystery solution when you scroll it, because now I get to see what's next for me because I've completely forgotten, and you know you kind of that little sinking feeling like, oh no, more rigging and mass, and oh, I thought I was going to do the ship itself, but then okay, all right, not so bad. I'm going to dig in here because this is really coming together pretty neat. And yeah, it's just one of those canvases and execution with thread that I just think is really standout. It's going to be neat to see because it's a big canvas. If you look at her original post, it's a big canvas. And it's just going to be fun to see this get finished. But, So Jan Fitzpatrick, and there's a good chance we'll get her on the show coming up to talk about this and learn more about what she's doing. But,
I'm really looking forward to that, just to hear sort of the thought process about, you know, how do you decide what stitches to use and when to break away from just a flat covering surface and when not to. And, you know, also, like, do you get bored of, like, if you're stitching sky forever, and this is even a question for you, do you find that you then jump to another part of the canvas just to unbore yourself? Because I find that I do that sometimes where I'll be doing something and I'll just say, ugh, I can't do this anymore. I need to do something else. And so I'll move to a completely different part of the canvas where it's a different stitch or a different color, just anything to not have to look at the same thing.
Yep. Oh, I do. I still have that thing. I just have to start upper left and work my way down. But yes, I will do that. I will go to another portion, still working my way down. But yes, just to do something different. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just something.
Keep it fresh.
Yeah. But then, you know, and having other projects going serves that same purpose. Like, you know, having a project like you described earlier, a mindless one where you can just, okay, I want to stitch, but I don't really want to work at it. I just want to just stitch.
I just want it to happen. Right. I want things to come out of, it's like kneading bread at that point, you know, you just want, you're just doing it. So I like those pieces sometimes.
That's a good analogy. Kneading bread. Yeah. I just want to sit here and just work on this dough for a while till my arms get tired. Yeah.
Yep. Just knead some bread and watch some mindless TV or, you know, listen to a program or something or, you know, another podcast or whatever it is and just kind of keep the hands moving.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So check that out. We'll have a link. And actually, Jan was kind enough to send a photo. So wherever we post this show, whether it's on FlossTube or on various Facebook groups, you'll be able to see the picture because I'll use that as the main picture. But it's really
it's worth it, yeah.
Yeah, go to threadmedley.wordpress.com and follow Jan as she works her way on this tall ship because it's fun to watch. It's really unfolding and it's going to be really impressive when it's done. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then a bit of good news. Now, I have an older version of Jan Ippolito Christensen. We got to get her on the show. Joe, not Jan, but Joe. Joe Ippolito Christensen. Her book, The Needlepoint Book, is in its third edition. And came out some time ago, I don't know how many months ago, as a hardback. Well, now on October 10, it will be released as a paperback for $35, and you can get it at your local needlework store. And it's just one of those books to have. It's a good Bible of needlepoint, and it's just a good book to have. And if you have an older version, I'm sure the newer version is updated and better and more stitching and more technique and stuff. But I find myself referring to my older version quite frequently. It's kept handy. But by doing it in paperback, then I immediately thought about going to Office Max or, you know, whatever office supply store, because they'll cut the spine off and then they'll put a spiral binding on it. And people do that for a lot of needlepoint books, so they'll lay flat.
But I never thought that.
Yeah, this is one of those books that I think I'll buy the latest version just to do that, because my book, the one I have, is a hardbound, and I think I'll do it, buy the paperback of the third edition, and just go down and just have it bound so it will lay open flat, because it's obvious why you would do that. You got to use two hands to stitch, but you sure would like that page open for reference. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never thought of that, and that is a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I don't know what they charge to do it. It can't be a whole lot, but even so, it's worth it because it makes that kind of a book so much more useful. So $35 you can order now, October 10. So third edition is the one, the newest one. So there you have it. Let's see what else.
What sort of things do you find that you use that for reference for? Just like stitches or tips, or, you know,
yes,
strategies?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a fun book to sit down and just leaf through and leaf through to remember things you've forgotten or discover new things that would be helpful. Yes, all of those things. It's just one of those books. It's one of those good reference books. You know, we used to, when we did the marine aquarium thing, we talked about several books that just everybody should have. And this is one of those books that every needle pointer should have on the shelf, just because you get in a spot, how do I do this? It's probably in that book and probably well described and well illustrated. And yeah, it's just a good one to have around, literally a Bible. And it's been around forever. I mean, 33 editions, but big gaps between editions. I don't know when the first one was done. I have no idea. But yeah, this is a good one to have. So, yep, highly recommended.
Excellent.
Yep, what else let's do this quickly. It's sad. Nordic Needle is closing their physical store. They're closing that. And I thought, well, okay, I can see that, because up there in the Dakotas, how much traffic can you get? And it's a destination for stitchers, but how does that sustain a shop if you don't have heavy traffic every day? Mm-hmm. And so they're closing that store. And I was thinking, I hope that they're closing the store, but I know when we had those folks on, there seemed to be a number of people from the area that would come in to stitch or to gather. So maybe I'm hoping that they'll find some way to do that. But then there was also a statement that they're evaluating whether to keep the online business open.
Oh, that would be tragic, because they're my go-to for everything.
Yeah. Tragic for that. But I felt tragic One, because when it comes to these unusual stitching techniques, they're the place for all of that. The techniques, the supplies, the tools, all those things. And to have that go away would be really sad. But then I also thought, wait a minute, this is a very large, well-known online business that is considering closing the doors completely. And what is that saying about the hobby, where, you know, the biggest concern is, are we supporting the local stores because so many people are buying online and there's so many people like you that they're really your only effective source. But what is that saying about the hobby if an online store is considering closing? And so then I got more concerned about the hobby in general, because I've kind of felt here in the last couple of years like there's been a real uptick in activity with needlework and a lot of all kinds. And so that really bothered me more than, above and beyond closing a physical store, that really bothered me was, wait a minute, what is that saying if an online operation of that size is considering closing because there's not enough business? That made me really kind of squeamish, because we don't need that. So I don't know. I mean, I hope they keep it open. Yeah. I hope that, and I always have that reaction where, oh man, I should buy something from them. Like my one purchase is going to change the course of action, you know?
Yeah. But, well, my goodness, books, threads, kits that I've gotten from there, scissors, like the basics, really.
Right.
You know, that's the first place I go when I need something, because they have all of the things.
So I hope they're able to work it out.
I hope so too. And just a good bunch of people, you know, just a good group of folks.
Right. Been there forever. And yeah, you just would hate to see that go away. And that's the real, the stitching hobby in general would take a real hit from that. So I hope, pulling for him. It's like, oh, I should buy something from him. You know, I can't buy something every time somebody's, can't do that. So
no, but I mean, if they weren't my go-to already, they, you know, cause I'm constantly now looking for other little things, because again, I'm still building my infrastructure, right? I do actually have need to purchase certain things. So maybe next week we can talk about stands and lights and things of that nature. But even just little things like, you know, having just an array of needles, you know, instead of just the needle for the project. Now, you know, I'm starting to build now I have choices of things. And then it's going to be, where do I put them?
Yeah. That's quickly going to be your problem. Yeah, when you're knocking over red wine on silk, that's quickly going to be your problem, is where to put this stuff.
If it wasn't, someday I will take a picture of my stitching corner, because it is probably the least well conceived corner ever. just because my lamp is like a gooseneck lamp, and it hangs over me. So to get to the table, I have to reach up and over the lamp, and it's a guarantee. So I have a coffee next to me that has a cover and a straw. So
yep.
I'm using the sippy cup method, which we are still going to do, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. We've been doing research, merch, Fiber Talk merch.
Merch is going to happen.
Yes. And there are sippy cups for wine drinkers. So yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, I got a chuckle out of Debbie Rowley the other day. She had to, I forget how she said it. I've got to do some work. I got to get some work done, concentrated work. Obviously design work of some kind. And her work surface sounded like it was just a piled up mess. So she stopped and did a cleanup. And I asked her if it was a forearm sweep of the surface into the basket or if it was an organized cleanup. And
putting away of things.
Yeah, it turned out it was a mixture. So there's in many instances there's nothing more satisfying than a forearm sweep right off the edge. Okay, that's done. Now move on.
Yeah.
So, and then other people were talking about having to clean up, and it was fun. What really made me chuckle is I had just done that same thing like a week and a half before, because my surface my table that I work on, which normally has plenty of space, literally had gotten to the point where I was moving things out of the way just to have a little space.
Right.
And it was, wait a minute, I just bought this big table and shelving so that I would have space to spread out, and now it's all piled up with stuff. This is ridiculous. And so it was, you know, I just stop and clean this mess up because it's ridiculous. And so I did, yes.
I think needlepoint supplies are like air. They expand to occupy the space you give them.
Yes.
So you just have to take that into account and just, you know, acknowledge its nature and try to contain it. That's all. Yep. But, you know, don't fight its nature. That's just what it is.
Yep. No, and now I remember. Yeah, that's so true. I remember what I was going to put the piece for Connor's Christmas stocking on my scroll bars. And when I did the first one, you know, I remember it was the first time I had those scroll bars, the Millennium scroll bars, and the surface, the air, it was all cleared off, and I had plenty of space. I could put them out, and I could learn how to put the cloth on and get it attached. And I had, and then this time, I couldn't even lay them on the table. I couldn't lay them on the table, let alone spread things out so I could get it done right. And it was just, you idiot, you know, clean up the mess. Put the threads away, you know, put the books on where they go on a shelf, put the scissors back where they belong, clean this mess up. And I did. So
sometimes you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish Debbie would have done it before and after. That would have been fun to see. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to see my before or my after, or maybe you do. And everyone will say, oh, Christine.
Well, see, I know what you have. I can picture what you have. Because before I got my table, my stuff was in a basket on the left side of my recliner.
Yeah, yeah.
With a tray table on the right, and my stand, and I could kind of, it was like getting into a cockpit. You know, there was a weight. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do, exactly.
Yeah, there was a way to wiggle in, and there was a way to wiggle out. And if you had to get out in a hurry, you invariably knocked something over. And and it was just a mess. And and that was what prompted me to head to IKEA and get what I really needed. Yes.
Right.
So, no,
right.
I can pretty much picture what your work area is like. Yes.
Because
I think we all get there. Yes.
And I think too, like I'm appreciating, because people have talked about using office chairs to stitch in. And at first I was like, oh God, that would be horrendous.
No.
But now the idea of going into, working on a floor stand, like a proper stand, I can really see the benefit to having a good office chair because it's set up for you to sit for comfortably for lengths of time. So now, you know, when I do the stand, then the next thing is going to be a chair. And so I'm going to use a dining room chair until I annoy myself enough. And then I'll go out and buy a proper office chair.
It won't take long. It will not take long.
No, it won't. It won't, because I don't like sitting in chairs. It's just, even when I'm at work, I end up, you know, curling up one leg or doing something because I fidget too much. So, no, it definitely won't take long. And then it's just my family's just going to have to deal with the fact that one corner of the living room is now dedicated to that. But, you know, I worked on a middle school play a few years ago, and I'll probably be doing the same this year. And at that time, I just bought a giant, like a 6 foot long folding table that you would use for like parties or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Big plastic table I set up my machine. So for like 2 months straight, that was my living room. And somebody came over and they're like, oh, I love this sweatshop look you're going up here. And, you know, and then I realized I was probably sewing way too much.
Yeah.
It was what was needed, because to do that kind of costuming, you need big space. You need space to work. At least needlework is a little tinier. So that's better.
Well, when you get your chair, a bit of advice: when you get your chair, make sure that the armrests on it will go in and out, in toward you and away from you. And then up and down, because as I have worked with my chair and my stand, what I have discovered is I moved the armrests all the way in, because that's just the way it works for me. But the armrests are at different heights.
Oh, yes, because your underarm is going to be lower than your overarm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for the longest while, I had them at the same height, and I just couldn't get comfortable. And then I dropped the one just a little bit, and by golly, there it was. And so I have forearm support at the proper level for each, and
World of difference.
Yeah, world of difference. Yep, big difference. Yep. So there you have it. That's enough.
I think so.
So Sunday, Doug Krynick.
Yes. I am so excited about that. That was so much fun to do.
Yes, we have Doug Krynick, and that was great. And interesting thing is one of the magazines that I'm editor of is called Efficient Plant. And when we got done recording with Doug, the Efficient Plant magazine, we have a writer, Michelle Segrist, who does a story about a plant's maintenance, reliability, efficiency programs.
A factory.
Yeah. She'll travel to manufacturers and go in their factory and interview the people who are responsible for keeping the thing running, saving energy, making sure bearings are greased, you know, figuring out why motors blow up, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so I asked Doug because, you know, he's got an operation that started way back in his parents' house. And you'll get to hear that story, but he has old machinery. And then in a modern day manufacturing environment where they're cranking out a lot of threads for a lot of different reasons, you know, that it's interesting how they deal with that and how they modernize. And he said they have a couple of guys, I think one guy in particular, who has really helped them advance their manufacturing processes. Well, Michelle is going to do a story. It'll probably be in our December issue, and we'll talk about it. We'll have a link. Michelle is going to do a story about the Krynick factory and the manufacturing.
So jealous.
I know, and that's the thing. I am really jealous because I want to go there and do the photography for the story, but I can't.
Oh, yeah, that would be true. So for you from the photography side, and I can imagine like the macro shots that you could get would be so cool.
I know.
So cool. And then me, because I work in a factory, and so, you know, manufacturing efficiency is something that's, you know, kind of our bread and butter. This is what we do. And that's funny because that's kind of how Doug and I ended up connecting was talking about just that idea of like, okay, so now you know you can do it. And it's not even a matter of how can you do it so you make more money. It's how do you do it more efficiently so you don't drive yourself crazy.
Yes.
Right. So yes. It was cool to talk to him about that because he faces the same sorts of issues that I do in my regular paying job, but just in a different machines, right? Making different things. So that was a really fun conversation to have.
Yep. So the two people who are intensely interested in going to the Krynick factory and seeing how they
are
make
not
the threads
going.
Can't go. I know. It's like, where did this go off the tracks? You
know? Yeah, I know. Thanks.
So Doug Krynick Sunday, and then coming up as soon as the story's done, we'll talk about that. And then next Wednesday, Orna Willis is going to join us for the Wednesday show because she has a new design coming out that she's putting together to help raise some money for Puerto Rico.
That's great.
Yeah, so she's going to join us. We'll talk about other things, but we'll talk about that design and what she's doing there, which is pretty neat. But the design isn't ready, and so it will be ready when she joins us next week because she said the stitching's done but not the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll join us for that next week.
So you're saying I'm going to have a piece number 5 is what you're saying?
I did not say that, but you can conclude that, yes.
Mm-hmm. You can, in fact, conclude that.
Yeah, you can conclude that, and as will I. It's not, you're not alone, but mm-hmm. you can reach that conclusion quite easily. Yes, you can.
Good.
That's it. We're done. We're out. Thanks for listening.